Maybe it's my long hair. Oh, gosh. Well, it's really good to be with you. Really great to see you. And to be invited to come and share a word in the midst of a series where you guys are talking about confronting powers, which is never easy to do. Never easy to do, regardless of what that power is, regardless of how we feel about power. It is always difficult. So today we're going to talk about going against the powers of disease and death. So a light topic, which is great. So hear this story that will become familiar. This is from Matthew 9:18 through 26, as well as Luke 8, 40 through 56, if you want to read along. Otherwise, just listen. It's been over 12 years since it started. She didn't ask for this. Nobody ever really does. It just happened to her. She was not known for her risky behavior. This was simply horrible happenstance. But that does not do anything for the connotations thrown at her. It's always easier for people to believe what they want to believe instead of actually know what happened. But no one ever asked her, they just kept their distance, and she did the same. Truth is, she knew how to be careful. But there are enough people around her that weren't careful, so for the last 4,500 plus days, she has secluded herself so she wouldn't accidentally afflict someone else. This distance hasn't been terribly difficult, unfortunately, because her family has been removed and her friends have retreated. So she takes her walk through the village as she always does, early enough in the morning so as not to have a lot of contact with others. With this disease, she knows what it can mean for others if they touch her, and she's careful not to allow others to experience the same ridicule she does. The early morning sun feels good on her skin as it warms up the cool desert night air from the night before. The warmth of the sun is the only warmth she feels these days. It's the only time she experiences the sensation of touch now that she is known as unclean and not often touched. She knows she ought to be getting home soon. So before the streets get too crowded with the marketplace vendors and customers, but she'll cover her face once again and quietly buy a few necessities for another lonely day of seclusion, prisoner in her own home. As she browses the vendor's cart, she catches herself eavesdropping as she overhears the conversation between a couple of vendors. They're talking about the rabbi she has heard of before, the one who apparently has the power to heal people of their diseases. And the two of them talk about this most recent miracle of a paralyzed man being made to walk again, not just move and wiggle his fingers and toes, but to get up and walk away from his illness. Oh, if I could meet him, she thinks, things would change for me. When she hears he is scheduled to visit and pass through her town sometime later in the day, she just freezes. Her heart begins to beat faster. It feels like it's in her throat, and the wheels in her mind start turning. Miss, her paralysis interrupted. Miss, do you want to purchase something? Hoping she wasn't caught eavesdropping, she quickly pays the vendor for her items and she hustles home. She asks herself, could this really be happening? Her heart and her stomach fluttering and in knots at the very same time, something she has not felt in forever. And she sits at the table, looking out the small window of her garden apartment that faces the town's main road. She's glued to the activity of the world outside, picking up every nuance that would indicate a miraculous healer's presence in her neighborhood. So she begins to develop her plan. All right, when he comes, I'm going to go out to him. I'll cover myself. I'll work my way through the crowd to get close enough just to touch his shawl. Oh, if I could just touch the edge of it, I know that would be enough to heal me. I'm certain he is who people have said he is. He has to be the one. I'll be healed and I'll be restored and I can have my life back again. And then she almost misses it. It all happens so fast. A crowd appears instantly outside and the noise in the street coincides. This has to be it. And she freezes again. She's prone to do this. Is this fear? Is this excitement? Is it her hope? Snapping out of her momentary paralysis once again, she steps outside into the busyness, and it is absolutely crowded. Is everybody in town out here? It's now or never. She checks her hood. She pulls on her sleeves, covers herself appropriately, and makes her way out into the thick of it. Her tiny frame jostled by the commotion. The weight of the crowd presses against her, and she gets lost for a moment. But her eyes are steady, and they are searching, fixing to find the white and the blue shawl he'll be wearing. That's what she's looking for. That's where there's healing. He's coming. He's coming. She risks her exposed hand out into his path, and as he passes by, she grabs it for just a second. What feels like eternity, she grabs and feels every fiber of that cloak, of that prayer shawl on his shoulders, and she lets it go, retreating back into the crowd. As she inhales, she knows she is healed. She feels the new life in her blood. Her bleeding has stopped, and she knows she has a future. The energy fills her body, and she says so quietly to herself, "My plan worked. Oh, God, thank you. Thank you for who touched me." And she pauses. Pulls her hood down a little further. "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out for me. Who touched me?" "Jesus, there's thousands of people around here. Everybody touched you. This is not the time to be a germaphobe, Jesus." No. Power left me. "Who was it?" Crowd's almost completely silenced, and she begins to tremble. It's visibly shaking. She, an unclean woman, had reached out and touched a rabbi of all people. "What have I done?" She thinks as she cycles through the consequences she knows she now faces from the trouble she has caused. Suddenly she felt every eye in the crowd staring at her, even though her cloak was covering her face. The crowd creeps away from her. They now know who it is. They recognize her as that woman. What is she doing out here? They don't want to be touched by her. They don't want to be associated with this woman. And they creep away far enough to now reveal that she is herself alone and vulnerable before the rabbi, her now Messiah, Jesus. Falling to her knees at his feet, she spills her whole story. She didn't hold back. She was embarrassed and relieved at the same time. It felt so good to come clean. She found herself feeling more and more safe in his presence, and as she shared her story, she could see it in his face, especially in his eyes. It was gentle and it was comforting, but not as gentle and as comforting as what happened next, because he came over and he knelt down. He pulled pulled her hood back over her head. He wiped her tears and brushed her hair behind her ears. Then he said, "Daughter, your faith has made you well." Saying it loud enough for everybody who had backed away to hear it, he calls the unclean, bleeding woman, daughter, and he says, "Your faith has healed you. Go in peace." What's going on here? Sometimes Jesus does weird stuff. And sometimes he does things like he's just trying to cause trouble, or like he's planted troublemakers out in the crowd to prove these points. But this moment of desire for this woman to come out and be healed because she believes and she knows she has no more options. The doctors have said, there's nothing more we can do. Any family members ever heard that? Nothing more we can do. She said, "I've got one. And he's my only shot." And as she does this, she steps out, she risks in her trust. And she's not only made well, she's reinstated to the community. Jesus calls her daughter. He welcomes her into relationship. Calling her daughter gives her a place, a title that indicates inclusion. When she tells him her story, he and everyone else comes in contact with her reality. They hear her whole story. The reality of her social and religious status, her uncleanliness. Now she's been healed and given new life, set free from bondage of illness and seclusion and shame as well. Three of the major unfortunate realities that come with disease. Jesus also puts the power in faith, not material things. She reached out and touched his shawl, something that she thought would be life-giving and healing, but it wasn't. It seems that way at first, but it wasn't. Jesus tells her, "Her faith made her well. Your faith has healed you." My shawl has nothing to do with that. The power he gives us and the grace we seek. He invites us to believe in him and witness the power and mercy that it brings. And one more thing. Jesus is not interested in handing out miraculous healings and not breaking stride. He doesn't pull them out of his pockets and go ahead, everybody, take what you need, right? When he heals, he stops, he stoops. He listens, he heals, he restores, and he makes both the story and the healing known. It was very personal and very communal. Everybody heard her story. Everybody heard him call her daughter. Disease is draining. A lot of you know this. It's draining when you are the one with the disease, and it is draining to be the one who is the caregiver to the one with disease. It drains a lot from a lot of people. And disease brings so much more than sickness. It brings loneliness. For some, it brings shame. It certainly did for her. It's debilitating. It's paralyzing. It secludes us, it brings loneliness, it brings despair, it fosters low self-esteem and insecurity. When we're well and healthy, we can forget all that comes with disease. We forget what it's like to feel prisoner. Feel prisoner to an illness, to a bed, to a room, to a hospital. When we're healthy, we can also fail to see the sick as people. Right? And we only see them for their sickness. This is an unfortunate instinct. What's even more unfortunate is when we see someone's disease as his or her own fault. You know what I mean? See this person and we say, "Hey, you did that to yourself. You could have chosen something else. You chose alcohol. You chose drugs." I'm going to name a few others. What about anger, hate, racism, jealousy? These are diseases too. They're diseases because they're debilitating, they're secluding, and they foster insecurity. We cannot count them out. Maybe one of these hits home. If you feel uncomfortable, I hope you will also feel reassured. Because Jesus isn't planning on leaving you in your struggle and disease. He's not even planning to heal you and keep walking. You hear me? He is planning to stop and listen and heal you and make your story known. Listen in for one more story. There they are. At this point, Sid and Nancy had had enough. They had been addicts for so long, they could no longer remember how they got there. So they turned for support. They sought help and they got it. Life was turning around. For several months in treatment, they had gone through nearly all of the lies that addicts tell themselves. And they found out this. They found out that their addictions did affect others, people they cherished. They had come to find ways of managing life's problems without getting wasted or getting lit. They had no control on their own, and they had to come to find the importance of reliance on a higher power. And they stopped comparing themselves to others, and they took responsibility for their own actions. They had made so much progress. They were both humbled and proud of the discipline they had put into their lives and grateful for the people who came alongside them. But they still felt the disconnect. They got the whole higher power piece, but now it seemed a little vague. They thought often about God in recent days, and God didn't feel as tangible as they once thought. They thought back to step 4 in AA as they struggled to know how to make a decision to turn their will and lives over to the care of God as they understood him. That was escaping them. They didn't quite understand God. This was mainly because the people in their lives who claimed to know God and understand God ended up being judgmental, often hypocritical. They certainly didn't understand their struggle. The few times they shared their past with people in the church they tried to call community, they were met with silence or a trite, shallow answer. Sid says to Nancy one day, if this is how people who know God claim to understand God, and I don't know if I want anything to do with this guy. The two of them had yet to feel set free with Jesus. They have done exceptionally well at acknowledging that they need help. They've been granted the serenity to accept the things they cannot change. They have the courage to change the things they can, and they are growing in wisdom to know that difference. But they're not feeling accepted by their church or set free by Jesus. They don't feel welcome, and this feeds their insecurity. When they've trusted and stepped out and risked judgment, they haven't been embraced. Then one day, in a moment of feeling secure, they reach out to their good friend, Christian the Christian. They laugh about it too. Sid and Nancy have been struggling with their addictions lately, and lately their urges are just more and more difficult to not cave into. They're so afraid they're going to fall off the wagon again, they're going to lose all the ground and the confidence and the respect and their friendship and their peer group. But life has been especially hard with unforeseen job changes and the death of Nancy's mother. They're having a really hard time coping, and they can visually see the spiral that they will go down. So they sit with Christian one day, and they share their story. I mean, he knows their past, but they share with him their recent story and how they're just struggling again, and they feel like, hey, did any of this even work? They feel relief in naming the struggle and the situation. And Christian's a good friend. I know he's paying attention. They talk about how bound up and just tied up and tight they feel. They confess how unsure they feel about Jesus and the church. And they ask him who he thinks Jesus is. But Christian doesn't talk about Jesus. He talks about his own struggle. He doesn't try to prove Jesus' existence or push them to convert right then and there. Instead, he tells his own story. He tells his own story of struggling with temptations on the internet. You know what I'm talking about? He talks about how much he has hated himself for the ways he's acting and how awful it makes him feel. For the people in his life who have been hurt by it, I feel so selfish. And they are shocked by his honesty. They sense a genuine sadness in his story. They can see the brokenness that has caused in his life. But he doesn't only talk about brokenness. He tells them how he was introduced to Jesus, the real Jesus, not the judgy one that so many others conjured up, or the one that he keeps trying to convince himself is not real, but it doesn't always work that way. And now they begin to think that hope might not be lost. Because he starts telling them of the love and the security he feels with Jesus. He shares this story of the bleeding woman. Other things have helped them along the way. Talking about it sure helps. But nothing has been as restorative as his relationship with Jesus. And he can't deny that. He can't deny what Jesus has done in his life and the new life, the addiction-free life he has been invited into. And he also admits that he has difficult days. He admits that some days and some situations make it almost impossible. And he talks about the way he justifies it for himself. We've all done that. But he also talks about how he always has hope. And he has a friend to call. A physical, living, breathing friend. They talk for the next hour or so about Jesus. And this is totally unplanned, but here they are. Christian talks about his community of faith, how it's the most genuine group of people he's ever known. Because the people there are open about their struggles too. And he never feels alone. Throughout their entire conversation, Christian never used big churchy words. He just told a story. He was honest about where he's been, about where he is now, how relationship with Jesus and those who follow Jesus has actually changed his life. And he evangelizes to his friends, but he doesn't even know he's doing it. It's beautiful. It's that unforced rhythm of grace. So we're going to leave with this. Two things. Maybe you need to be set free. Whatever it is. It doesn't have to be huge. It could be small. It could be one person. It could be alcohol. It could be anger. Okay? You need to be set free. What has kept you from reaching out? Is it fear of sharing your story? Because people know you one way, and if they hear this nugget of truth in your story that has affected you for a long time, you're worried that everybody will run away and nobody will listen. Reach out. Reach out to a friend. Reach out to a friend who knows Jesus very well. Somebody who you know you can trust. Somebody who will look at you like they've always looked at you. Jesus is our healer. The one. And he has miracles. And he has healing power. And he's not going to keep walking. And he's going to accept your initiative to reach out and say, I need you. I need a small piece because I believe I can change because you can change me. Second thing is this. Jesus is asking you to stop. To stop and find the hurting person and bring them to him by reaching out. This means sharing your story. This means actively listening. This means not being so worried you have to have the right thing to say. It means listen and love somebody and look at them the way you've always looked at them. Tell your story of freedom, how you went from pain to healing. Tell them how it is that our faith in Jesus makes us well. I'm going to leave you with this. Jesus' words from Matthew 16, 18 through 19, paraphrased. On you I am building my church. On you I am building my mission of redemption and grace. The gates of hell and death and disease and addiction will not overcome it. I'm giving you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. You have access to bring others in when they feel locked out. Whatever and whomever you bind on earth will remain bound up. And whatever and whoever you set free on earth will be set free forever. Amen.